What I'm going to talk to you about today is part of a larger study. I'll try and elaborate it as I go along. It was a specific series of studies we did in healthcare workers cooperative with NIOSH Division of Safety Research and the Finnish Institute of Occupational Health, among others. Myself, you see there, Dave Lombardi, my colleague, is going to be up next, was on the team, Santosh Verma, Melanie Brennan, Helen Marucci-Wellman, who was presented yesterday on her work in Vietnam, in here, Gary Sirach, who originated the study on our end, Wen Chen, who was involved in our group as well, and then Jennifer Bell and Jim Collins from NIOSH, and Raoul Grundquist from the Finnish Institute, and have no relationships to disclose. Just briefly, for people who aren't familiar with the Research Institute, because there are we keep encountering folks who've never run across anything like us before. They've got it pushed to one side. How about that? Better? Okay. So the Research Institute, essentially our mission is to advance scientific business relevant knowledge in workplace and highway safety and work disability. We publish everything we do in the open peer-reviewed press, so there's no secret sauce. We're basically what you see is what you get. And we're organized into four centers that broadly are attempting to cover primary through tertiary prevention and also mitigation, return to work, and reduce disability. So as I mentioned, this is a broader study. It's had some recognition over the last several years. We won the 2006 NORA Partnering Award for Worker Safety and Health, and also the 2008 Best Paper in Ergonomics. Was also nominated for a Shepherd Science Award at CDC. So it's had quite a bit of recognition. The collaborating units for this particular study in the program are ourselves, NIOSH, and the Finnish Institute. And this all came out of the thing in the lower left-hand corner there is a book that we did after what we call a Hopkin Conference, really a summit meeting of experts in the field on slipping and slipperiness. And this collaboration was kind of born out of discussions at that meeting, so I just put that on there to give you some background. So why do we care about falls? Falls, if you look here, this is NICE data. So this is basically showing you the emergency department experience for unintentional injury in the United States. And this just shows you the dominance of unintentional falls. For comparison, get an arrow here. Come on, ThinkPad, catch up. There we go. Motor vehicle occupants, okay, being treated is down here, okay, in the adult range. And so you can see that falls dominate. If you look occupationally and non-occupationally, falls have a significant footprint. Occupationally, work we did looking at developed countries, 20 to 40% of disabling occupational injuries were accounted for by same level falls. It's also in the US consistently the second most costly injury event type after overexertion each year. For the last 12 years, we've been doing what we call Workplace Safety Index, which we directly value the cost of same level falls in the US at $8 billion this past year. Actually, the index year for this was 2009. Because you have to wait a while for costs to accrue. And that is just the cost for people who missed more than 5 days away from work. So if you added all the other costs, if you added indirects and other things, you'd actually look at a much bigger number than that. So a substantial problem. Why healthcare? Healthcare, obviously, if you have been reading the paper the last 10 years, basically we're exploding in healthcare, we're expanding. In 2008, which is one of our key kind of wrap-up years in the study, 13 million workers, about 11% of private sector employment, and that's going to keep on growing. You can see BLS forecasts for rapidly growing occupations here. The top five, three of the top five are actually in healthcare. So in that industry, there were 171,000 injuries with days away from work, which involved 24% of which involved slipping, tripping, and falling. And the estimated incidence rate of same-level falls in hospitals was nearly twice that of the private industry average. So a significant problem in hospitals as well. So this particular component study had to do with a case follow-back and a case crossover. I'm not going to talk about case crossover today. Looking at transients, I'm going to talk about the case follow-back aspects from the study. Looking at detailed circumstances. And I think the real value of this study is not, we did a much bigger intervention study, NIOSH-led, that has some really valuable outcomes in terms of the impact of broad-scale intervention programs in combating falls. And there's a whole online, which I'm sure Don or I can turn you on to, a whole online guidebook that's been produced by NIOSH that deals with that problem of how to kind of go about intervening in a hospital environment. But what we did here was something far more specific than what we did in the intervention study. So what we're doing here is we're actually following back people who fell, and they didn't necessarily have to get injured. They just had to have an incident. Most of them got injured. And asking them specific questions about their history with this particular experience. So there's a lot more granularity here to kind of flesh out what we did at kind of macro level in the intervention study. There's a lot more detail here, and that's what we're trying to get across in the presentation. And particularly differences between slipping and tripping and some specifics on slipping that surprised us and I think have implications for laboratory studies on slipping, tripping, and falling, which, by the way, laboratory science in this area dominates. Field science in it is almost non-existent. So if you were to go into PubMed and kind of cook up this topic, you'd kind of find NIOSH's work and our work, and that would be, and maybe the Finnish Institute's work, and that would be pretty, everything else is pretty sparse beyond that. So it's a pretty new area. So for our study sites, we had 7 sites, 4 private hospital sites, 3 public hospital sites. Was overseen by IRB at all the partnering institutions as well as at the research team institutions. So our case definition was a hospital worker who reported a slip, trip, or fall event, didn't have to be injured, but they were largely injured, to the occupational health department in their hospital from the study period 2001 to 2006, typically within 24 hours of the event. With consent, a case information form was completed and faxed back to us typically within 2 days. We had a telephone interview conducted with a participant typically within the next 2 weeks. So what did we collect? Occupation, age, gender, other demographics, workplace, location, preceding events, slip, trip, and fall characteristics, which I'm going to talk about here, contaminant types, surface transitions, and then sort of standard things, nature of injury, body part injured, but some things that aren't typical, body part impacted or the direction you fell, those kinds of characteristics you'll see here. So 153 workers participated in the study. 86% were female, which is a typical demographic for the industry, and particularly that we have a heavy nursing representation you're going to see, and that's a pretty standard percentage for nursing as a field. Mean age was 46, and you can see largely white, then black, and somewhat some Hispanic participation, and then other made up the rest. So we sorted out occupations into what we call direct patient care and indirect patient care, or kind of direct action on the patient and supporting occupations. And kind of the key pieces on the slide here are that the direct patient care occupations really dominated in this category and or in this study. And you can kind of see that nurses and health technologists, technicians, kind of were the lead in the direct patient care category. Receptionists, secretaries, and clerks, maids and housemen in the non or indirect care category. If you look at slipping, tripping, and falling, basically, takeaway from the slide is 89% of our workers fell. Some slipped and tripped and didn't fall, and they're represented here in the table at the top. But 89% of the workers fell, 55% after slipping, 32% after tripping. So slipping predominant over tripping. And you can see a lot of people are slipping and tripping despite the fact that the floors don't have any reported contaminants. So just because you're managing the contaminants doesn't mean you're not going to have a slip and trip and fall problem. And importantly to us, 42% of these occurred in public areas inside the facility, so places that not only medical personnel, patients would traverse, but you know, families visiting, contractors, anybody else basically walking through the hospital. And then 25% in public areas outside the facility, 18% in direct patient care areas. So you have a fair proportion of these that are not occurring sort of in closeted spaces where only the workers are being exposed. There are actually a lot more people being exposed than the workers in this case. So that was kind of an interesting finding for us. What about injuries? 192 injuries across the total study population. Strains and sprains, contusions, nonspecific pain were typical. We did have some people that had fractures and more significant injuries. And the plot there shows you the kind of density of a frequency of injuries in where the knees, back, and ankles and feet were the kind of most typical spots to find people getting and reporting injuries. Now, this is the part that's kind of significant, I think, to lab science and to what we know about slipping and tripping. So here we have the direction the body fell. This is not typical data for field studies in slip, trips, and falls. And what I want to highlight here with this, and also the body part impacted, which we also asked, are these key boxed categories. You can see slipping is pretty well distributed between forward, sideward, and backward, so there's not a kind of prevailing direction. Most of the laboratory work that's been done historically has focused on kind of slip backward type model, where somebody has the foot slip out from under them going forward. And we'll talk about a little bit more about that on the next slide. Tripping, you can see, has a pretty predominant forward body fall direction. And then you can see the distribution of what people impacted, which kind of makes sense. The arm is pretty typical. But I think importantly for slipping, the hip pops up, I think, due to the sideward component of the body falling. And then in terms of the nature of injury, you can see we've got basically that back pain and nonspecific pain, strains and sprains, occurred more significantly with slipping than with tripping. So this is just an editorial comment I threw in here. The next set of questions that we asked that I'm going to present were very, very detailed, and we weren't sure when we set them down. We actually had some biomechanics people, and we said, okay, just because you can measure it on video equipment in the laboratory doesn't mean somebody can actually tell you that answer about their event. I mean, you can all think of examples of a study where, you know, you might do a ladder fall study and ask the person, tell us exactly what rung you were on when you fell. Okay, that's probably not one that's going to get a lot of reliability in terms of really knowing. I mean, how many people are actually counting rungs when they climb a ladder? You could ask them maybe approximate height and stories or something like that. But when you start asking highly granular questions in a self-report questionnaire on something that's a phenomenon that's normally measured in the laboratory by some objective system, you kind of are a little suspicious whether you're going to get anything meaningful or not. Can people really tell you much about this? And so we were actually kind of surprised with the findings we actually got. So in terms of slipping, the worker's foot typically slipped forward versus sideways or backward. Okay, fair. The foot placement, now this is a biomechanics aspect, and I'll go ahead and pop the build up here. So you have kind of just notice that those categories are equally distributed. So what is flat, what's heel strike, what's toe off? Those are all biomechanics lab or tribology lab terms. Okay, so foot flat, this is an illustration from our earlier HOP conference. Foot flat essentially, or what's sometimes called sort of mid stance, is this positioning of the foot. Toe off is where literally your foot is about to leave the floor, and the toe is sort of the trailing component. Then heel strike is where your heel is actually setting down. And as I said before, what's represented here on this in this illustration is what typically a lot of laboratory work has been done on, which is sort of the straight line walk, heel slips out from under it, heel strike. And so a lot of focus in the industry, in laboratory science in this area, has been on heel strike aspects. But you can see that the participants here are fairly well distributed across all three. And so the question we had about that was, okay, so is this a result of kind of I don't know? So people are just sort of picking a category, and, you know, because it's a kind of challenging, detailed question. I mean, think about the last time you slipped or fell. Do you remember which way your foot went? I mean, you know, so it was something we were kind of surprised at. So we ran some analysis, and we were really shocked to find that the answer is no. It's not just people guessing. If you look at the contrast here between the direction the body actually fell and the reported foot placement at the time of the slip, it is strongly suggestive that people were very aware of exactly what was going on. And the surprising part for us about this is we're asking them, you know, in many cases a couple of weeks later, and they're still able to report this with very good precision. So this is pretty amazing stuff. The other thing about this is it suggests that lab science really needs to change, that, you know, lab science has all been focused on the heel strike. And here, the flat stance was actually a higher proportion of injured individuals were reporting the flat stance. So, you know, they need to think about maybe moving away from a straight line, walk ahead type paradigm and think about how they can better capture this information in the laboratory. So we think this has real implications for the lab sciences side. So in terms of limitations, our reporting mechanisms likely influenced by participant injury severity. So if you were really severely injured, if you were knocked out or something like that, you would go into a trauma center. You wouldn't, you know, you'd sort of bypass our mechanism in the occupational health department. And uninsured individuals are probably less likely to go through the hassle of participating in a study just because, hey, I got up, I dusted myself off, I moved on. A lot of people are embarrassed by slips and falls. I'm always surprised at people who have, who have rather dramatic falls and then insist that they're fine, they don't need to be checked out, they dust themselves off, keep on moving. And it's kind of all based on, an inappropriate stigma in the society that falling is somehow a funny thing or an embarrassing thing. It's a serious event. And what most people find a few days later is when you fall, even if you don't fall, even if you just have an imbalance, you have a lot of co-contraction that goes on trying to stabilize that. And what will happen is you may not feel great. I mean, you may feel okay and dust yourself off that moment, but I guarantee you a day or two later, you're going to find all that co-contraction you did is going to show up in the form of a little delayed onset muscle pain. And so you may not feel so good in a couple of days. But I'm always surprised that people just, you know, want to get up and not deal with it. And so if somebody didn't have an injury, there's a likelihood they probably just skipped a study. You know, validation of self-reported exposures is a major challenge of retrospective study designs, and so this one was certainly not immune to that. I think key pieces of this that we found is that the majority of the affected workers in the study were in more highly trained direct patient care professions, which has real implications for health service availability and quality at a time when demand is increasing steeply. So this is a kind of message back to the industry on kind of leveraging other key things that they're concerned about in addition to safety and health, and sort of saying, hey, this is what our safety and health issue that we're bringing you means in terms of some other things that you're trying to worry about. 85% of worker slip, trips, and falls occurred in areas where patients and or visitors are also exposed. So interventions which address hospital worker slip, trip, and fall risks, like the work we did in the NIOSH study, may also protect the provision of healthcare services and patient visitor safety. So visitors here includes itinerant employees of others like contractors and vendors. So it's a pretty broad swath. When you think about the typical traffic through a hospital, it's a pretty big a swath of people. So you're basically not just exclusively protecting workers, but you're actually leveraging the worker protection into protection for the general public. So it's a nice kind of public health as well as occupational health impact. And then slipping and tripping are significantly different in many aspects. Some of these have important implications for laboratory simulations and experiments compared to what's being done currently. We also just mentioned the preliminary results of the Fallback study we did were used to inform the development of the intervention study by the NIOSH team and ourselves, really highlight the importance of contamination control and surface transitions and also impacting development of floor cleaning and maintenance programs in terms of some of our initial findings. So I'd like to thank Lori Wolf, Mary Matz, Eugene DeMaster for their facilitation of our relationships with the participating hospitals during data collection. They were really essential and could have done it without them. They basically led the teams on site. And that's what I have for you this morning. So I thank you for your attention. I'm happy to take any questions. Thank you. Yes. I couldn't tell you about the industry pickup from the intervention study. I can tell you the guide is out there. It's pretty comprehensive. It has a lot of visual, you know, a lot of photographs of examples of pre-post intervention corrections that were made. So it's something you can actually give to safety and health and facilities management. They can kind of, you know, it's not a lot of p-values and, you know, odds ratios. So it's very practical, very pragmatic, and so people I know are using it. In the study itself, we had, I believe, a 54% reduction in workers' comp-related injuries in the study period from pre to post intervention. And the intervention itself is a kind of rational person's or rational safety director's approach to intervening. So the disadvantage of a design like that is I can't tell you whether it was a slip-resistant footwear or it was a change in maintenance practices and floor cleaning, or I can't tell you which component worked. We can just tell you that the study as a whole is a kind of shotgun intervention of things that make sense as a package worked. I would say I don't see that. Certainly there are people out there who are interested in dismissing injury or, you know, treating occupational injury as a kind of blame the victim scenario. That's ridiculous. I think we have to develop a culture where people feel free to come in and talk about these things, because how are you ever going to hazard identify if everybody's being silent about the issue because they're afraid of consequence? That's just absolutely insane from a safety perspective. So we have to create a culture where people feel comfortable coming and talking about and encouraging. I did a talk yesterday on upstream factors, basically using slipping as an upstream indicator instead of using fall injury. Let's look at slipping, and we've done some really cool work with that. But you know, until we can change the focus to, you know, we want to know where hazards are, we want to modify them before they actually injure somebody. You know, and a key component of that is when people are falling, we need to know where that is and what's happening. So I think it's really, really crucial. And I think the guide can really help, because it's not kind of up there in the peer-reviewed literature. It's supported by peer-reviewed literature. That's what we won best paper for. But the guide itself is actually very pragmatic. So it's something you can kind of take and walk people through and hopefully change the culture. It is a huge loss area for the industry. And just sort of saying, oh, well, what did you do wrong, is obviously not making an impact. So maybe it's time to think about the ways in which, you know, informed science, evidence-based, can actually tell us how we can solve the problem, as opposed to what, you know, if the definition of insanity, right, is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. So I would say try something different. So, but thanks for your question.
I should say that we actually, the company tries to have a good preventive program. It's really more at the individual level, mm-hmm. rather than just
I would tell you the problem has a history of comedy. I mean, if you think about, I mean, going back centuries, you know, falls are funny. I mean, that's, you know, and so people have a hard time taking falls seriously. But there's a tremendous morbidity burden. You know, back pain from overexertion is large, but back pain from falling is more costly, because there's more energy involved in the actual incident on the whole. So, you know, the severity of injury that you get from falling is, you know, very, very significant. And I think you're right. We have to find ways to improve upon the culture and to let people know, hey, we want to know. And I think the key thing is, hey, if you find a hazard, if you see somebody slip, if you slipped yourself, go, you know, let facilities know, make the hazard known to people. That's a key component of good, safe, you know, good, safe behavior, safe practice for the hospital. And particularly protect, if they don't get motivated by protecting themselves or their colleagues, think about the motivation for patients, because often patient safety is a much, people are on board with that much more aggressively in, at an individual level than they may be about their own safety. You know, the implications for patient safety, and the implications for their families who come to visit the patients. There's a much broader constituency here. I think that's a key message out of this study. So thank you. Any other questions before we move on? All right, thank you very much.